Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. And use my special link to sign up today. Hi there, OCD family community. I've been on a joke kick lately, and you've let me know you're here for it. So I've got another one for you. What is anxiety's favorite exercise? Well, that would be jumping to conclusions, of course. But I'm bummed. But seriously, fam, regardless of how anxiety or OCD rolls out, we are in for a treat because Natasha Daniels, therapist and creator of AT Parenting Survival Community Podcast, you name it, is here to bring hope for OCD and anxiety warriors. And I can't wait for you to hear more. I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family, the OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started. All right, fam, hello. Welcome. How's it going? It's been a busy week, but one thing I enjoy doing each morning after I grab some espresso and see the kiddos off to school is to scroll through a few memes or reels before I get started for the day. So when I saw a photo this week, which I'll share over on this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com just for kicks and giggles, I knew I wanted to share it with you, fam, because it's what appeared to be a little toy. I don't know, it could be ceramic, but it looks like a little toy garbage dumpster, but it has within it a candle. And I love it because it was a literal dumpster fire, family. And I am here for that kind of humor. But it also made me think, because, you know, that's how I roll, that often a lot of what's going on around us can feel like a dumpster fire. We can have OCD threatening dire possibilities, let alone job stress or school problems, relationship drama, perhaps a faith crisis, financial woes, or so many other tricky issues. And that's just within our own families, within our own households. But beyond that, we have elections and wars and uncertainties abounding. And what I want to say and make clear is this gathering space is a place for loved ones and chosen family impacted by OCD and OC-related disorders known as OCRDs. OCD affects everyone. People of all skin colors, genders, sexual orientations, faith traditions, ages, and beyond. So while I realize that there are almost always other dumpster fires raging all around us, I maintain my commitment to stay focused on you and how the mental health of you or your loved one is impacting your relationships. We are a community of support and resources, laughter and tears, but most of all, hope and togetherness. And while I recognize world events and dynamics and warfare are very real issues impacting our OCD family community members from all over the world, there are a lot of places where you can go and hear from people a lot smarter than me on those issues. So that's the very intentional reason why I try to stay focused here, fam. So if you're new to our family gatherings, I want to welcome you. And for return, fam, hey, good to be with you again, because we are in for a major treat as I welcome our special guest, Natasha Daniels. Natasha has been an anxiety and OCD therapist for over 2 decades, and she combines both her clinical experience with her lived experience while raising her 3 kids with anxiety and OCD. But as if that wasn't awesome enough, many of you may be familiar with her because she is the creator of the website AT Parenting Survival, as well as the host to the show AT Parenting Survival Podcast and the YouTube channel Ask the Child Therapist. She also gives in-depth support to thousands of parents raising kids with anxiety or OCD through her books or courses in the AT Parenting Survival Online School and in her online membership, AT Parenting Community. Her latest book is the Crushing OCD Workbook for Kids, which I happen to have in my office right now. And so while I'm sure we can all believe she is a busy woman, she still carved out time to come hang with the fam. So we're thrilled to have her join us and share more about her resources because she's here for you, fam. So we're going to dive in, but just know if you want to check out any of these amazing resources or communities that we discussed during today's show, you can jump on over to this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com because I always provide links and resources for each and every episode I publish. And in this case, a cute dumpster fire candle. So head on over to this episode's blog and I'll get you connected with all the greatness Natasha has created, okay? And with that, let's meet Natasha. Well, welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast. Today, I am just thrilled, family, because I get to introduce you to a wonderful, wonderful content creator, therapist, and just an amazing resource within our OCD treatment community. And that is Natasha Daniels, LCSW. So welcome to the OCD Family Podcast, Natasha.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I super appreciate it. Family, I know you're going to appreciate it too, because we're going to be talking a lot about what we can do, what tools, what resources, and how we're not alone. That's probably the most important part, how we're not alone when it comes to managing OCD, even anxiety, right? But managing these mental health symptoms for our kiddos and the challenges we can face, the strengths we have, all of it and more. And so first off, I was just telling you, Natasha, before we started recording, it's so fascinating to me how people have gotten into treating OCD. Some people have started their careers doing it. A lot of people like myself came upon it much later in our careers. And so have you always treated OCD, or how did you come into this specialty?
Yeah, I always treated OCD, but I was really a general pediatric therapist. Mm-hmm. And then I really, really enjoyed the kids with anxiety and OCD. You know, yeah. Having that in my family, having my own struggles with anxiety, like I felt like I really understood those kids and I liked that type of therapy. And so over time, I started to just get a reputation in the community of, oh, she does anxiety and OCD. And so my practice got more full with like that type of client. And then eventually I just closed it to any other issue other than anxiety and OCD.
Yeah. It is interesting. Like no matter how small or broad your treatment community is, if somebody is like, I have felt relief that I didn't know if I could ever feel, you very quickly have people coming out of the woodwork going, I heard that you can treat anxiety. And so you're saying for yourself as a generalist, you were able to really hone in and obviously provide a lot of hope for folks because they were like, yes, we want to see her. I'm sure your waiting list got very, very long. And so in terms of creating the AT Parenting Survival Community, so family, as you heard in our intro, Natasha has really created an international, a global network, because you have people from all over the world, right, Natasha?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so I would love to hear how this went from the specialty in anxiety and OCD in my practice to building this online resource and community.
Yeah, it was a very long evolution. Yes, I won't go into all of it because it's really long, but it started with writing a book. I wrote How to Parent Your Anxious Toddler, and mm-hmm. then the publisher was like, you need to have a platform. And so I didn't know what that was, and I'm kind of a go-getter. So if I'm like, oh, you have a to-do list of this is the stuff you need. Mm-hmm. So I created this online world, and it was initially just like anxious toddlers, and it was a mommy blog like to support parents who were raising anxious toddlers.
Yeah.
And that quickly evolved within 2 years to be all kids with anxiety and OCD. Mm-hmm. And that world expanded because that was in 2015. And so that world expanded to a podcast and then a YouTube channel and then online courses and now an online membership community as well. So it's just evolved over time.
Yeah. So new layers, new areas of expansion, really too with the times, because I feel like YouTube has grown. It's one of the, I think it's the second largest for now search engine. And mm-hmm. it is something where it feels like podcasts too overnight have become so dynamic and everyone's doing a podcast, right? you know, myself included. So I could, I think I speak to that. But yeah, it's really grown over the years. And so for people tuning in that maybe don't have a diagnosis, maybe they're just considering like, gosh, I'm not sure how to help my kid. This is some of the presentation I'm experiencing. And I happen to be one of those people on YouTube searching, how do I deal with this, and came across Natasha. Can you help explain the difference? And I realize this in and of itself could be a bigger conversation, but between OCD and anxiety, because we can have anxiety in our OCD. OCD is very distressing. Yeah. But can you help, just for general listeners that maybe are kind of waltzing in here or even running and screaming like, I don't know, help me, what we mean when we're talking about OCD or anxiety or both?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think a lot of people are still lumping them together. And I hear a lot of parents in my community will come to me and they'll say that they've heard therapists say OCD is just a manifestation of anxiety and we just need to target the anxiety, which just blows my mind.
Right.
And it's important for people to understand that there is a difference. There's a physiological difference as far as the biology of what is happening in our brain with anxiety versus OCD.
Yeah.
But anxiety is predominantly in the amygdala, you know, and our amygdala is having a false alarm. And OCD is much more complicated. It has to do with the circuitry in the basal ganglia and the prefrontal cortex. And the amygdala gets triggered because it is an anxiety producing disorder. Because when you are being triggered with intrusive thoughts or feelings, of course, that brings anxiety. But they are two different disorders. They are categorized differently in the DSM now, thankfully, I think. And they're treated differently. So unfortunately, you can have comorbid conditions. I know my kids have anxiety and OCD. And so they have generalized anxiety disorder and various phobias and themes that are in that category. And they have OCD. And I see that in my practice and in my online community, too, that they can have both. But how we approach the OCD is going to be more nuanced than how we approach anxiety.
Yeah, I use, and I think, an analogy. So I'm going to warn everybody up front. The fam here is like, yes, she thinks in analogies. But one of the things that I compare OCD to is kind of like making a jam or a jelly. So I'm letting my Midwest show through here. But you can have a recipe for how to deal with it, and it can never set correctly. And you're like, man, this batch of jelly turned out like crap, but I followed the recipe, right? And so OCD can kind of feel like that, because there are a lot of nuances to it. And the application, as straightforward and somewhat formulaic, like a recipe as it can seem, can also be very, very challenging. And if you don't have that nuancing skill and experience, that can make a big difference in how your treatment works, in your recovery, etc. And so it's not to say that you can't learn, family, and we learn more through practice, but it does require a little more practice. And so when you were talking earlier about you started out more generally, I'm guessing that was as a CBT therapist. You were starting out more generally, and this kind of treatment stuck for you. Can we talk about what this kind of treatment is? Because for anxiety, we see that the literature endorses exposure therapy and that that's really helpful. OCD, being special, being extra, needs, yes, exposure plus. So can we talk a little bit about what does it mean to try and treat OCD if it's this nuanced thing?
That's a great question, too, because I think if we're treating anxiety, a lot of times we're doing just pure cognitive behavioral therapy. So we're reframing cognitive distortions. We're getting kids to think in a different way, getting them to look at their issues in a different way. And when it's OCD, that can actually create mental compulsions. So the first step is really just psychoeducation of normalizing, because a lot of times kids and parents come there thinking, this is really embarrassing. We have just this really weird problem. We don't know what it is, but he keeps worrying that he's going to harm himself and we don't know what to do with that. Or, he, you know, like the themes that are more out there and are not as well known, people are very like overwhelmed and they feel a lot of shame. So I think the first step is that psychoeducation of, yep, this is normal. This is what OCD is. And let me explain how it grows. Because it's counterintuitive for not only the child or teen, but also for the parent.
Yeah.
Of you've been saying these things and you've been part of the loop. But it's every parent starts there. Most parents start there where I am part of the compulsion and I don't even know it. So I feel like the psychoeducation, I almost felt like the shift in my therapy style was I moved more into a teaching mode. I felt like I was a teacher versus just, not that I was ever really like that because I was definitely CBT, but lay on my couch and let's just explore whatever comes up. It was like there was a very clear framework of how I was going to approach therapy in a really systematic way, starting with education, starting with educating the parent as well, and then moving on to exploring what those core fears are so that we could start to develop a plan for exposure response prevention.
Yeah, yeah, that's beautifully said. And so the response prevention piece being that piece for the extra OCD here, but also it can be very helpful in an anxiety case as well. And we do see compulsions can show up in generalized anxiety cases as well. One of the core differences, though, the sticky thoughts, images, sounds, those obsessions are very, very core to OCD. And so there have been a lot of interesting discussions in the community because I think people are trying to figure out where does the line between generalized anxiety and where does it cross into OCD? Should we just treat it like it's OCD? And what would you say to that? Maybe for parents going, I don't know what kind of specialist I need to find. Do I need to find somebody? Because there's certainly more anxiety specialists than there are OCD specialists out there.
Yeah, I think if you're dealing or you're suspecting that you might be dealing with OCD, definitely seek out the OCD specialist because an OCD specialist is much more likely to be skilled in treating anxiety disorders as well because they go together so often versus the other way around. If you see an anxiety therapist and they're treating it with like the general framework of CBT, they can do more harm than good because yeah, in anxiety, you have safety behaviors. And so, you know, I might have to take a mint with me in case, you know, I'm anxious or I might have to do things, but it doesn't balloon out of control. It's not like the more I do that safety behavior, the more safety behaviors I have to do.
Right.
It's just I have this crutch and I have to learn how to systematically let go of that crutch. So it is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And really, it's the CBT part that I've had families in my online community who have had multiple anxiety therapists and then have come into my community and I've helped them connect eventually to an OCD therapist. But one of their first ahas as they're diving into my resources is, oh my gosh, the therapist was handling this all wrong. They were problem solving. So if they had an intrusive thought that they were bad and they had moral OCD, the anxiety therapist is saying, well, let's talk about that. Like, what makes you feel like you're bad? And when you have a bad thought, what's a good thought you can have? Well, that's a mental compulsion
right.
that they're inadvertently reinforcing.
Building so and strengthening. Yeah.
Yes. So it can get really tricky. But if you see an OCD therapist who has OCD training, they're not going to have that approach. They're going to be much more sophisticated in how they're going to approach it.
Yeah, they're going to bring you the jelly jam combo there, that nuancing where they're going to be able to separate out what is functioning. That's a very important word. What is functioning as a compulsion and what is sometimes just a good question, a good ask. Not all questions are compulsions, but it can get really tricky when you're dealing with just the behaviors. Maybe just the pain of feeling like I feel completely out of control and I feel like I can't help my kid, but I'm not sure what's going on. And so as we talk about all of this, I think another natural question that bubbles up for people is, well, so when does it reach a point where I should reach out for help? What do you have to say to that? I'm sure you've addressed it many times.
Yeah, and I think it's a personal question. I do feel like when it is OCD, if it's financially affordable, and your child is willing to go see someone. Out of all the problems in the mental health world, I feel like with OCD, it is really good to get support no matter what. It's one of those really complicated disorders. I always say OCD is chess and anxiety is checkers. Like it's complicated. And to get that extra support, no matter how mild the OCD is, I think could be helpful. You know, unfortunately, most parents are not in a position where they can afford it because it's very expensive. Or they don't have access to care in lots of countries, including the United States. And so at that point, it's like, when is it critical to get support? You know, I'm going to have to really dig into my finances or I'm really going to have to work on motivating my child. And it's going to be an uphill battle. But when is it necessary? And that answer would be when it's impeding their social or emotional well-being, when they are not able to go to school, they're not able to eat, they're not able to do their daily tasks of functioning, that can go down a rabbit hole really fast. And
right.
so when you're starting to see that, that's a really good sign to go get the help.
Yeah. And I'm just going to go out on a limb here and hypothesize that people aren't just stumbling on because they're just so interested in, I mean, I'm interested in OCD. I treat it. I have it in our family. I have lived experience and I didn't realize that much until I was really zoomed into treating and was like, wait a minute, this is familiar. But I'm going to guess most people have come across this because they've heard about, oh, have you checked out Natasha Daniels? She does all these great videos that can help. Check out her resources. They're going to be Googling and searching for resources for parents that have anxious children, highly sensitive children. We're going to find people looking explicitly for OCD. But also, because OCD likes to commingle with other different mental health presentations, you might be dealing with eating disorder, you might be dealing with trauma, you might be dealing with ADHD, your kiddo could be autistic, you could be in a number of different scenarios. And support can look like going directly and getting connected to a therapist, but also support can look like, hey, this is hard, and I'm just going to see what resources are out there. And so if you're listening to this right now, you found resources, whether you're coming because you're part of the fam here or whether you're coming because you are like, let me absorb everything Natasha puts out, then you're here because you recognize that need for support. And so I do think it's an individualized journey, and it also kind of depends to a degree on how we operationalize support. But having support is really important. And that's pretty core to the community that you've built, that you have described, that has grown over time. And so we'd love to talk more about AT parenting survival. And there are so many different facets to how it's grown over the years. So can you kind of give us an overview if someone is thinking about needing a community of people that understand, or maybe we can kind of look at it a couple different ways. They've been in this world for a while, and they have a lot of wisdom they can impart to other people in their shoes. And so would love to hear more about the design of the community you've created, and how and where are those access points that people can dive in for more support?
Yeah, it has grown. And it confuses people because they're like, wait, what do you do? You know, someone will find one entry point and they won't realize that there's all these other things.
Right.
So there is a website, AT Parenting Survival, which kind of houses all of my free resources. And so every Tuesday I have a podcast that I put out at AT Parenting Survival Podcast. And every Thursday I do a YouTube video, which you can just search my name, or it's like natashadaniels.com/YouTube. I think we created a short link for that. And those are videos directly for kids, teens, young adults. I think I actually have a lot of adults watching those, but yeah, they are for the sufferer. They're directly for that. And so those are my free resources. And then I have an online school at atparentingsurvivalschool.com. So it gets complicated. And those are for those parents that really want that extra support, or they can't have access to therapy. It's kind of a DIY clinically sound courses that will walk you through various things, like how to teach your kids to crush OCD, or there's a kids course and teen course on OCD so they can take it directly. Mm-hmm. There's a space course. There's lots of things in there for parents to either supplement therapy. A lot of therapists will actually recommend their clients take these courses as a supplement because it saves the therapist a lot of time. I have a lot of parents in there who are all over the world who just don't have access to care, whether it's financial or the child's not able to do that at that point. And the last thing that we developed, which was in 2019, was the AT Parenting Community, which is an online community. It's a membership community, less than a copay per month. And there's a lot in there. And so if you're looking for like in-depth support, they get free access to a lot of those courses. So that's a benefit. Yeah. But we do weekly Zoom classes. We do monthly support group calls. We do support group calls for the kids and for the teens and the parents. We create hope message care packages for any member who says their child is feeling hopeless. We'll write them a card and we'll send them a package with some support. So there's a lot of stuff inside there as well.
Wow. And so family, if you're listening and you're like, well, I'm trying to figure this out, but I don't even know that my kiddo would be willing to go into treatment, or maybe I'm trying to wrap my mind around this first. And one of the things you mentioned in all of those resources is space. So we've talked about space a little bit on the show here. But once you know about space, you probably even look at those YouTube videos you do, Natasha, and they're like, oh, these are great reminders for parents, whether they've explicitly gone through space training or whether they're just needing some of those little reminders of how things function and how to cope with it. But can you describe space just kind of real briefly for parents? Because it's a great resource, especially if you're like, my loved one is like, nope, don't want to touch any of this. I am dealing with this on the daily. I just don't want to even think about it anymore.
Yeah. A lot of times that's the point where parents throw their hands up and they say, I can't do anything.
Right.
Like, we're just stagnant. There's nothing I can do. And thankfully, space has formulated a lot of stuff that therapists were doing anyway, but has made it more available to the average parent. of here's a systematic approach to disentangle yourself. I worry about using the word accommodation because I feel like accommodation is a different meaning, like in the autistic PDA world. And I feel like there's an overlap where that gets confusing. So I think it's important for us to recognize that we're talking about detangling our involvement with growing the anxiety in OCD.
Yeah.
And so especially with OCD, we get caught in loops where we have to complete a compulsion and we're not even aware more than half the time that we're part of that loop. So educating ourselves on what OCD is, which the space treatment doesn't do that, but the next step is space where it's like, how can I systematically like sit my child down, pick out all the quote unquote accommodations, the things that I'm doing to grow the OCD, and then slowly over time, so not to overwhelm myself or my child, but pull back that behavior so that I'm not growing my child's OCD. There's that awareness. And we can always do that. And that's a great thing that we can do while we're waiting for our child to be able to or be motivated to work on it themselves.
Yeah, it's a great point. A lot of times our children require our participation to maintain or grow an environment in any particular way, right? If they have a specific need, they usually are going to need our help in some capacity. And so I think for a lot of parents learning about OCD, they say, oh my gosh, I feel awful if I've been contributing to the problem in some way. But like you said, parents come by it honestly and choose your battles. Sometimes you just got to get out the door and the kid's like, I can't open the door or whatever the thing is. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'll open the door, right? And you think this might be a simple thing. I don't have this hill to die on right now. I'm going to be late if we don't leave right now. They need to be in school. They've already missed whatever amount of days. We don't want authorities on our case about this. And so you see how you choose your battles, but also whether they're directly avoiding their fear of opening a door or having you do it for them, you start to see how you got swept and really pulled in to this cycle. And so the whole point of learning more about that process isn't to make anyone feel bad. It's helping us understand, wow, I really love my person so much. And I just realized the way that I was trying to support them wasn't supporting them, because OCD or anxiety was just popping in there and taking all that support and then demanding more. And you actually have a great quote on the homepage of your website that says, helping your child with anxiety or OCD starts here. You can always help. You just need to know how. So it's like, thank you for helping. Love you loving on your person. Let's see what little things, if we could do this a little differently, then we can actually really get through and break through and help our loved one versus OCD kind of grabbing onto that and then demanding more. And so space is really about training parents of children and anxious childhood emotions. And so space is one avenue that can be helpful. But really, whether you're seeking treatment, joining an online community like Natasha has created, or looking into anything else, what we learn is OCD is a family affair. And the treatment really needs to target the family, because OCD has been robbing the most from these relationships. And so it can't survive. It's like the oxygen it needs is for you to be willing to open the darn door. So it's a beautiful program in that sense, because it's all about what are some of those little posture shifts? What are some of the things I can say instead and still be helping and loving on my child and on my loved one? And so I love that you offer space training as well, or a class. It's a course on AT Parenting Survival School. And again, you know what, family? I know some of y'all are like running. Some people are doing dishes, folding laundry. Some people are driving. So you know I'm going to have all the links over to the info about Natasha and all the amazing services that she has available, free and beyond, over at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. It'll be on this episode's blog. But you know, you mentioned something that I would love to circle back to because it's near and dear to my heart. For new fam joining, may not know, but the existing fam that has been with us knows that I have autistic children, and you brought up the differences of quote unquote accommodation, or not wanting to use that word per se, because of how that can clash with autistic PDA. PDA being pathological demand avoidance. I'm hopeful we're going to see more literature about this coming out. I think the UK already really embraces this in their literature and in the national health system over there. But can you describe what you meant by that in terms of autistic PDA? Because I think And I see it even in like the autistic parent groups that we have, you know, on Facebook or wherever. I'm old, so I get on Facebook, but wherever people might gather. There's so many things that can be described where I can see the overlap because I can't unsee it, right, with OCD. But we can see some high levels of distress when folks have a different way of processing the world. And a lot of our societal expectations are tough cookies. Do it this way. And so can we describe, without going on a whole rabbit trail here, a little bit what you mean by how PDA can be a little different? And so it's kind of, again, a nuancing of sorting out our understanding of something like accommodation.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of parents in my online community that have autistic kids who've been diagnosed with OCD. And so really it's been through their education and their jargon that I've been informed that some of the language that we're using in the OCD community is being misperceived. And I'm not a PDA expert or an autistic expert by no means, but I think it's just that crossover that you see that sometimes OCD is being misdiagnosed with autistic kids because there is stimming, there's rigidity and inflexibility and calming behaviors that can seem compulsive, but they're not. So I have had some families come in with misdiagnoses where I'm like, no, that's not just because he loves Roblox all the time. That's not, yeah, it seems obsessive, but it's not obsessive compulsive disorder. So a lot of therapists not understanding the difference. And then the other way around is attributing a lot of behaviors that are OCD or that are truly compulsions with their autistic behaviors. This is just who they are. They wash their hands 5 million times a day. Nope. You know, unfortunately, OCD is a comorbid condition that's very prevalent in the autistic world. And so it's fleshing that out. And then the language, where a lot of times in the PDA community, we talk about, or I don't really, because I'm not in that community, but there's an overlap of accommodating those needs. You know, the world is too loud. Let's accommodate that. Mm-hmm. Or they need things in this routine to feel like in control. So that there's a lot of talk in accommodations, kind of like we talk about accommodations in school in a positive way.
Right.
Like, what can we do to accommodate? So that word is not necessarily a four-letter word in lots of communities. But then the crossover in the OCD world, we use that in a very specific way. We're talking about accommodating the OCD.
Right.
Accommodating the anxiety and systematically pulling back. And I'm learning that that is a trigger word. When I make a post and I use the word accommodation about pulling back our accommodations and I'm getting DM'd because I'm on Facebook too and I'm an old fart. And people are like, oh my gosh, I really supported you, but now you're saying this and I can't align with you anymore. And I'm like, oh, we're not talking about the same thing. Let me help explain myself.
So. Let's get on the same page. Let's sing from the same sheet of music here because support needs, what you're describing is support needs, value-driven support needs. Are a wonderful thing. And if you, no matter how you process, whether you're autistic or whether you're autistic, understanding when we have support needs and having access to that and choice to lean into that is super important. When we think about the quote unquote term accommodation within the OCD world, we see how it's more of this ego dystonic. We talk about these words a lot in the community, but if something's in sync with your value system, it's something that's value driven, it's something that you want, maybe you even enjoy, it's ego syntonic because it aligns with you. But if it's ego dystonic, the short and sweet one I tend to use with the fam here, Natasha, is that it's distant from who you want to be, right? And so in terms of when we conceptualize OCD, the quote-unquote accommodation is always going to be something that is helping you avoid, minimize, neutralize perceived threat, distress, intrusions, doubts. And it's not something that's helping you be able to access your life, like staying in the classroom because I'm not physically in pain because I was able to have headphones on that helped bring down and reduce noise. And so one, similar with stimming, can be very, very regulatory. That is not OCD. We are all for keeping the things that are very, very regulatory. And it's also not the same as having a preference or having maybe a sensory aversion to something. We can have a sensory aversion to something and it's not functioning in an obsessive way and getting stuck and repeating and growing in intensity in this obsessive loop. We can just be like, nope, that's disgusting. Nope, that's this. End of story. I give my brain the information and then I move on with my life. With OCD, it always boomerangs back, right? It always comes back for more and says, hey, that time maybe you survived, but you need to do this and more. It gets so greedy. It gets so demanding. And so there are differences, but you can imagine if you are autistic or whether you have ADHD, maybe even a sensory processing disorder, and you have these different support needs, and then OCD goes in there and takes something like hand washing, or it could be like prayer, where you could be like, these could be egosyntonic things for me. And it amplifies and adds all these layers of distress. Now we're like, ooh, this doesn't feel good. Because, you know, value-driven prayer, some people might be like, sometimes it doesn't feel good. Sometimes I'm battling out different areas of my faith, etc. Sure. But that's different than having this intrusive fear. What if I am going to hell? It can apply across all religions. It can apply across atheism. It can apply in so many different ways. And so we do have to distinguish the difference there. But yes, the movement for more neurodivergent affirming care is something that is swelling in a very positive way. And I'm glad we all receive DMs, I think, from folks just letting us know, helping keep us in our lanes, right, of our what we clearly understand and what we can be educated more on. But yeah, it's a great point. So this international community that you have, you highlighted, sometimes people just don't have access to treatment or to resources in their area. I'm curious, is the community all in English, or are there multiple language variations where if people were in a country, but say they don't speak English, they could access some of those resources? Just curious.
No, that would actually be pretty impressive. We don't have that layer of sophistication at this point. So most of the people that we have are a huge population in the UK, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada are like our predominant ones. But then we have a lot of people who are typically English speaking in other countries. So Japan, Egypt, Israel, like lots of other countries that a lot of times they are international families that are moving around and just don't have access to care.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's a yet is the operative word there, right? Because I think that's something that our treatment community at large is just trying to do. Like, how can we increase access to people everywhere, right? And so part of one of those barriers can be language, but it is an amazing opportunity, particularly if you're a therapist or a practitioner that happens to be listening, or maybe just somebody that's like, I've been looking for where we're going to donate and allocate our monies to help support competency and understanding, and also similar to the neurodivergent affirming care, being able to also bring that cultural sensitivity and understand cultural dynamics in those areas. That's something that is on the wish list for all of us to continue to expand. But if you have somebody in your community, and if you're living abroad and you're like, hey, I'm dealing with this and other people in my community or village may be dealing with this, and I have an ability to understand it and could translate some of this information that could bring hope to people, that is a great resource as well. So the nice thing is, and I know you talk throughout your resources too, Natasha, is it's another reminder, like, we're better together, we're not alone, and we can help bridge some of these access gaps and struggles just by leaning into each other and the different tools that we have. And so some of the tools that you offer, you mentioned you have classes, people can sign up for the Facebook community.
So the Facebook group and the AT Parenting community are separate. So we have a public Facebook group, which is AT Parenting Survival. So if you search that, yeah. And if you're looking for free connection, we moderate that. We make sure it's a really safe place. And I'm just really impressed with how safe of a community that is, considering it is 38,000, maybe even 39,000 at this point, parents who are raising kids with anxiety and OCD. So huge group. The AT Parenting community is, we do have a member-only Facebook group for that, but it's a website, it's Zoom calls. So it's much more detailed. And there's normally about 1,100 parents in there. And they normally make in real person connections. We have programs where we will connect parents to each other. Some people were like, oh my gosh, you're like right down the road. And we connect the kids too. So they can have like pen pals and make friends outside of the online community.
I love that. You know, it's so powerful, family. When we have somebody that's in our shoes and gets it, and that we don't have to explain, well, it's complicated because, yeah, why don't you just not open the door, etc. And they can really understand. And we're using the door example, family, but if you're like, we don't deal with contamination concerns at all, it's one of many. Many, many, as creative as the brain is, I'm never surprised, and I'm going to guess the same goes for you, Natasha, the creativity of the brain. There are lots of different ways this can manifest. And so just knowing there are other parents going through that walk, having somebody that can guide you. And again, these groups aren't the same thing as getting therapy and treatment, but just having that echo chamber that, first of all, understands this is wreaked havoc and it's been painful and you feel out of control. And sometimes you're just like crying, not knowing how to deal with it. Like, they get it. And so that's so important. But then also being able to lean into the different tools, checking out the podcast. I'm guessing you don't just do the blog. You vlog now through YouTube, right?
Yeah, well, it's the blog is actually just, it houses now the podcast and the YouTube videos. I used to write, but I dropped that a long time ago. I was like, I'd much rather talk.
And I believe that you're busy. It's definitely a full-time job. And so it's a beautiful thing when you see so many people from our community that have really dedicated their time and their expertise and their knowledge to helping make sure more people have the accurate information. So that you're not following this recipe going, this should work. Why is this not working? Is it me? Is it them? Is it? Well, it's because it's nuanced and it is tricky. So you recently, earlier in this year, also wrote a book. It's called Crushing OCD Workbook for Kids, 50 Fun Activities to Overcome OCD with CBT and Exposures. And I think for those of you that are in therapy, and we've described exposure and response prevention, so exposure plus the twist, the response prevention, that preventing compulsive responses, which if it were as easy as just not doing it, no one would need the treatment. It would be a beautiful thing for us to need different jobs for that reason. But the reality is it's very, very sticky. And a lot of parents can struggle with, like, how do I do this at home? I get how we're doing it in session. Maybe my therapist even says, or my child's therapist says, we're going to practice this exposure this week, but I want you to vary it. And the parents or family, everyone might be like, how, what? And so you wrote a book that gives different interactive examples. And actually, I have a copy in my office right now, has a lot of really fun ideas. So it's a great book and resource for therapists, too, if you're working with the pediatric population and you're like, gosh, I've done this one exposure so many times, I'm kind of stuck with how to creatively brainstorm and problem solve this. And so can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, that was kind of the goal, was to create something for younger kids. There are quite a few OCD workbooks for teens and adults, but there really wasn't something that was specific for like 6 to, I would say, even 10-year-olds or even a little bit older to like systematically. There are some great OCD books for kids that age, but nothing that really systematically walks them through what treatment would look like in a book form from very beginning all the way to the very end. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of people email me and tell me, like, I'm the only therapist in this rural community. It's me or nothing. And I don't know how to treat OCD. And so the intention of the book was, there are parents and therapists who are in that situation where it's like, it's me or nothing. Or there's therapists who are adult OCD therapists and they don't know how to adapt it for the pediatric population. So I wanted to make this really simplistic tool that could help families directly or can help the mental health professional directly help others, and break it down into 50 really simplistic activities that are walking them through treatment through these exercises.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that we also were discussing is we can come up with lots of great ideas for exposures. Part of the benefit of often pairing with a therapist, if you're able, is to make sure that we're addressing something that's value-driven underlying that, right? You know, if I have a core fear, we've brought up contamination examples quite a bit, but maybe my core fear is like, I'm really afraid I'm going to transfer a disease to somebody I love and they could die, you know? And you might listen to that and go, that sounds dramatic. Or you might be like, I had that conversation at breakfast, right? You might be like, yes, Nicole, we get it, we get it. And so going, okay, so what are ways that we can address the core fear? We can do that through contamination. We can do that through a lot of actually really creative exposures. And so as long as we're keeping the goal in mind, it's not about necessarily going to a gas station and touching all the door handles there and finding the grossest gas station knobs we can. We could potentially set up an ERP exposure that way. You wouldn't start there. So if you're listening, being like, what? You know, we wouldn't start there. But again, it's so important that we, whether we're the parents or we're the therapists, we understand, why are we doing this exposure again? Oh, it was to help with this thing. So if that gas station door becomes relevant, like, I need to travel 5 hours to see grandma and I can't make it that long without needing to use the restroom. And so I'm going to have to be able to go in and out of a door. Now we have something that's value driven that is more tied in. Not just seeing how we can find the most disgusting thing available and flood our brain with an exposure around that. And so I love that you have the book, that you provide a lot of guidance, and you do a lot of so many helpful videos. And so I think a lot of that nuancing comes from understanding the technique. That's why even if you were making jelly, you'd be like, I'm going to go to YouTube and watch somebody make jelly. And they're going to describe and narrate the process. And I'm like, ah. And so this role that you've taken as really kind of a psychoeducator, Natasha, is such an important adjunctive piece too that can be added to that. And so while it's not the same as treatment, it's so incredibly helpful. And so as we close our time together, if you had one or two little nuggets that you might just offer to somebody listening, what message would you want to end on for them?
Yeah, I think there's always a place to start, no matter where you are in your journey. Because I think sometimes people think they're too far into it and there's nothing they can do. And some people are too new into it and they're like, I don't even know where to start. And there's always a place to start. So I think just asking yourself, what's one small thing I can focus on and get tunnel vision on? What's my current goal? What am I going to work on to support my child? And really honing in on that and taking that one small step at a time. Because when you look at the big piece, the end goal, it can be paralyzing and overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I listened to a lot of podcasts too, and this was not relevant to mental health per se, but just talking about the sheer volume and size of something, really like you were describing. There's somebody talking with another person. One had a talk show, one has a podcast, and there were like so many episodes in. And they were describing, yeah, if you told me right now you're going to go do like 800 episodes or 1500 episodes, I'd be like, I can't do that. I do not have the bandwidth for that. There's no way that's going to happen. But you start with one episode. You start with the one thing. And then you can get to a point where you look back, just like you said, with the expansion of the AT parenting community and all the resources that you've created, Natasha. You can go, wow, that's been a long process of really cultivating and growing. And if you tried to start there, that would have been overwhelming. And it wouldn't really have been possible to really attend to all those different arms and different pieces. But when you take a bite at a time, you're right. You can accomplish a lot. And so I think it's a really, really great point.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Well, this has been fantastic. I appreciate your time. And family, if you want to check out more about Natasha Daniels, please do jump over to OCDFamilyPodcast.com and check out this episode's blog. Because again, there are a lot of different pieces to this. So I'm going to line up the links and you say, okay, I'm interested in knowing about this. Click on it, jump over, find out more. But most of all, remember that you're not alone. And just a big thank you, Natasha, for taking the time out of your busy schedule. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. All right. How great was that, fam? I mean, the time, dedication, and amazing resources Natasha has brought to our treatment and lived experience community is invaluable. And for the OCD family community, it's so pertinent to so many of our situations. So thank you again, Natasha, not only for coming on and sharing all this goodness with the fam, but for your dedication to our field and helping others that often lack access to evidence-based help. You are seen and you are so appreciated. So with that, fam, we are now in the intrusive thought segment, which for newer fam is my application segment of the show. And it's that time to take what we've heard and figure out how to apply it here, now, today. But I tell you, Natasha couldn't have made my job easier because she left us with such a great point that there's always a place to start, no matter where we are in our journey. Did you catch it, fam? Let's listen again to Natasha's tip here.
I think just asking yourself, what's one small thing I can focus on and get tunnel vision on? What's my current goal? What am I going to work on to support my child? And really honing in on that and taking that one small step at a time.
So family, maybe you're a parent to a young kiddo or a teen, but maybe you're a parent to an adult kiddo or an adult kiddo to an elder parent. Maybe you're a partner, a spouse, godparent, or best friend to a warrior. Or maybe you're even the warrior yourself. Natasha's advice still reigns true. It's never too late, too early, or anything in between to get started supporting your loved one. So what's your goal, family? For me, my goal is to stay focused on the present. It's easy to get ahead of myself, just like anxiety, jump into those conclusions, eh? Full circle. But whether I'm thinking about my OCD, a loved one's OCD, or maybe just a series of dumpster fires around me, If I can focus on what I need in this moment or what my loved one is needing in this moment, then I'm supporting our needs now in real time. I'm creating safety, love, and room for whatever feelings, big or small. For you, maybe your goal will look similar, or maybe it'll be completely different, and that's okay. Maybe you'll start with saying, you know what? I'm going to stop opening that front door. Or maybe I'm going to stop battling on what my loved one needs to do and just focus on what I need in this moment. Maybe I need a self-timeout to come up for air or just focus on something that fills my bucket so I have more support and love to give when my loved ones need my help. There's no time like the present, fam, to get started. And hey, don't forget to look around. Whether you're in one of Natasha's moderated community groups, watching her YouTube channel, We See You comment section, hanging with the fam here, or even just hanging with your loved ones. Because fam, we're not alone, and we truly are better together. Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. It will provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the download on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family like Natasha and me sharing support for the family. That's right, I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. Therapists, ready to shape the future of pediatric OCD treatment? Join the Next Steps in Pediatric OCD on-demand course from Angela Adamson Springer, LCSW, and learn how to adapt inference-based cognitive behavioral therapy for kids. With research still emerging, this course empowers you to explore new methods and contribute to the growing field of evidence-based practices. With OCD Training School's 365-day access for on-demand courses, you'll gain practical tools to help kids by adapting ICBT's signature 12 modules to be as creative as the kiddos you're treating. So sign up at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses to support the podcast at no extra cost and support further growth and hope for our youngest of warriors.